This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. It's always great to be saving money on that power bill, using technology wisely, and living a more sustainable life. Hey, welcome. I am with my friend Phil Jones today. Phil was a commissioner in Washington State, all the way on the other side of the country from Georgia. Phil, great to have you back on the program.
Great to be with you, Tim.
So Washington State, now let's just start there. You guys have a lot of hydropower, right?
We have a lot of hydro. About, I'd say 60% of our electricity delivered to customers is hydro. So as you know, it's very flexible. It follows load and it acts as a battery too. So if we have a grid stress situation, that reservoir, that water behind the dam, and allowing it to follow the load and fine tune it has been very useful. But Tim, we've lost that margin, you know, because of increased usage, environmental regulations, climate change. We just don't have the runoff that we used to. So it's been a great resource, but we're, like you, we're headed into a new era now.
And I was out with my fellow commissioners at a conference there, on nuclear energy. You guys have a national lab out there as well.
Yeah, we have a great lab. You know, it was part of the Manhattan Project. There was a movie last summer, as you recall, Mr. Oppenheimer. Some of the nuclear reactors were sited there to produce plutonium that were used in the atomic bombs that were dropped on Japan that helped us win World War II. Those reactors were transferred during the Cold War. They produced more. And they also produce tritium, which tritium could be used for other purposes, weapons purposes as well. So, yeah, it has a rich history with high energy physics, with atomic physics. And when I was a commissioner, we tried to use the capabilities of that lab, you know, to help us in our decision making. And it was really great because the lab has, like Oak Ridge and Argonne, they've diversified into, you know, coal use, nuclear use, SMRs, electric vehicles, demand side management. So it's a great resource.
And you've turned your attention most recently to electric vehicles, and you've created an association. Tell us a little bit about the association and who's a part of it.
Sure. Yeah, we created this about 5-6 years ago. We felt there was a need to advocate at the state level among the sectors because, as you know, some of the challenges with the energy industry, we have these large organizations, utilities, energy companies, independent power producers, and they're big. And so this transportation revolution, as I call it, some people prefer transformation, but depending on the day, I'll call it a revolution or a transformation. You know, it impacts the transportation systems planners, the automotive OEMs, the people who design and produce vehicles, batteries. So what we decided to do was try to bring all of these into one trade association, nonprofit, where we could advocate, try to, Tim, I call it a big tent. So you try to bring different diverse interests into a big tent. And then if we can reach a consensus, which we usually do, but sometimes we differ, you know, that carries a lot of weight with people like you. I think the commissioners, the staff, and the state legislature. So we got started in about 2018. The Southern Company, where you live, the Southern Company was a big supporter. National Grid, a big utility in the Northeast. I had General Motors and Ford on board. We had an EV charging company, remember in those days called Green Lots. So Green Lots was one of the founding members. And we've grown from about 20 to about 60 members now.
Phil, we're sitting right now in the state of California at this conference. And there's a lot of vehicles just over at the port that are running back and forth here in California, and there's a great effort to decarbonize here in California, and transportation has kind of been labeled as kind of that next frontier for them. I mean, they've got more than a million EVs here. We've got about 40,000 in Georgia. So when you think about the importance of fleets, is that really the next frontier for electric transportation, or do you feel like that relief is going to come some other way?
Well, when we talk about the electric distribution system, Tim, probably the biggest impact on the grid, as you probably know, is going to come from the fleets, from these medium and heavy duty all electric vehicles. So I've been spending an increasing amount of time trying to get the fleets and the utilities and the vendors to work together, plan together. And it's a big challenge, to be honest, because they've never had to plan. You know, a fleet in the past, they bought diesel, right? They bought diesel. Diesel is priced pretty uniformly across 50 states. They do forward pricing and they can hedge. So they understand what their fuel costs are going to be. With electricity, as you know, how many utilities do we have in our country? We have 3,200. Many of them are large, but we have a lot of small municipal utilities, co-ops, and they all have different prices or rates. So the whole issue of rate design, how you design a price that fits their needs as well as the needs of transportation electrification and not providing a big shift in costs, you know, this is a big challenge. The other big challenge is planning and sequencing this, because to order an electric truck from Freightliner, and you've been there in Portland at the Freightliner factory, I think, from an eCascadia, an all-electric Class 8 truck, you can order and be delivered in 10, 12 months. But let's say you want to order 50 of those or 40 of those and charge them at the same depot. You can imagine that load, right? And so the electric utility doesn't know exactly where and when this load is coming in. And so we need to plan for that a lot better, because the worst outcome is the fleet in, let's say, Atlanta or Los Angeles orders 40 new beautiful all-electric Class 8 trucks, and they come to the depot and they can't be charged. You know, the charging infrastructure, they can't get it in time, and the electric utility is not ready for that kind of a load.
I was with Kenworth at my Clean Energy Roadshow. They had one of their box trucks that was electric, and they said that the batteries added about 1,000 pounds of weight, which is 1,000 pounds they can't carry. Do you feel like hydrogen has a place in trucking, or is it just too far off to be planning and thinking about it?
What I would say is this. So recently there was there are a bunch of fleets that ran all electric trucks for like 3 months all over the country. So they tested the Tesla Semi, which, as you know, is an all-electric, the eCascadia. So this was electric trucks, and they said, assume the same payloads. So, yeah, the battery's heavier, but they said, assume the same payloads. This was Pepsi, U.S. Foods, you know, a number of customers like that. And you know what? It generally worked, Tim, but a lot depends on, you know, how the drivers accommodate those needs. Do you slip seat? Do you bring in the drivers immediately? Or can you charge the vehicles overnight? What's the type of charger, the power level of the charger? Can you manage your charging better? So they push those vehicles to the max and they work. But I will tell you personally, I think it's a real competition between hydrogen fuel cell vehicles like the Nikola vehicle, you know, General Motors, Daimler, they're all kind of hedging their bets a little bit, frankly. They're doing work both on the hydrogen Class 8 vehicles as well as the all-electric, so with the battery development. But we're going to face some, so I think hydrogen has a real future, but the charging infrastructure for hydrogen is a big issue, right? So how do we get adequate facilities that are safe? As you know, hydrogen is very gaseous. It's very, very bulky at times. And so there are all sorts of things being looked at, including mobile fueling solutions for hydrogen. Frankly, this is being looked at for electricity as well, to put a substation on a skiff If the grid's not ready, you might be able to transport that kind of mini substation to where it's needed, and then you can fuel up with electricity. So, yeah, there are a lot of stresses on the infrastructure right now.
Just in our final minute, I saw a Waymo Jaguar, electric Jaguar, here today. Do you think autonomous vehicles, either like rideshare or autonomous trucking that's electric, is that going to be a thing?
Yeah, I think autonomous still has a bright future. I really do. I think it will be electric. It will be electric drive. Unfortunately, we had the situation in California in the Bay Area, as you know, where the Department of Motor Vehicles pulled the license for Cruise due to that unfortunate incident. So I think we have to take the long view here. You know, Tesla has been working on these 400 or 500 mile drives on the interstates. They're fairly predictable. And those could go autonomous and some others. So, yeah, both on the fleet side and the light duty side, I still think there's a future, but it's going to go more slowly than we thought.
Well, thanks for being on Energy Matters today.
Thank you, Tim. Good to be with you.
And how can folks find out about your organization?
Yes, if you go to our website, we are called the Alliance for Transportation Electrification. So just Google that, ATE, and you can get access. We have a robust website. You'll see me, you'll see our senior advisors, and go from there.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hey, Tim Ackle, stick around. Another segment coming up in just a minute. You're listening to Energy Matters. Hey, Tim Eccles here for GEM Car Wraps, GEM Car Wraps, this fantastic group out of Brunswick that do wraps on vehicles, jet skis, golf carts. They've got it on my vehicles, so check it out, GEM Car Wraps on Facebook.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South. The difference is good.
Logan Booker, producer of Energy Matters, here for Better Tomorrow Solar. Imagine a world powered by sunlight. Imagine your home powered by sunlight. Better Tomorrow Solar has a passion for helping you see this for yourself. Better Tomorrow Solar can install your solar panels at no upfront cost. Build equity in your own home rather than paying the utility company. Find out more at BetterTomorrowSolar.com. That's BetterTomorrowSolar.com, and see how you can make your world better.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory, an AmLaw 200 law firm with 180 attorneys in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. They take a business sensibility approach when advising clients. They provide industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief not if, but how. We thank John Gornall and all the attorneys and staff at AGG for sponsoring our show. Hey, Tim Eccles, back on Energy Matters in California with my friend Thatcher Young, who's coming out for a special trip that I'm doing. Thatcher, how's it going?
Great. Just so excited to be with you, Tim, and excited to be back in California.
You know, we talk about California a lot because they've been so far ahead of everyone in the U.S. Is California still the leading solar state in America?
Yeah, absolutely. They are top of the charts by a considerable margin, a little over 41,000 megawatts installed in California. Georgia, you know, continues to climb. We're now number 7 with 5,200 megawatts installed. And you really just continue to see really strong growth, right? The projections are 15% of U.S. households will be solar by 2030, and a new solar system's installed about every 44 seconds.
California's laws have been very solar friendly. Is it still the case? Are they backing up a little bit? How has adjustments been made through the years?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they have certainly been very friendly historically. They have changed that a little bit recently. You may have read about kind of the NEM 3.0, changing net metering to be more in real time, which is ultimately where you need to be when you have the level of penetrations that they have in California. We're just not there yet. So, love to see more net metering in the Southeast to kind of help us close that gap with California.
You know, certain places as we ride around out here, we see a lot of wind turbines, Palm Springs, other places. Is wind still significant for California?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think they're in an all resources market, right, where they're really looking at all solutions and trying to integrate solutions at a large scale. Is there capacity for wind? I mean, University of Georgia and Georgia Tech certainly have studied it. It does look like we have some offshore capacity that's pretty significant. Mm-hmm. And so I think we'll see some modest growth there. I'd like to see us take advantage of more coastal resources, tidal energy, wave energy. I think some of those things are underdeveloped in our markets. I think the next decade's going to see a lot of kind of convergence of technologies. And that's really what we're here to see in California, right? The convergence of solar, electric transport, electric vehicle charging. That's really the future, right, is the integration of these resources.
Yeah. We want to learn from both the great things they've done and mistakes that they made. We're going to be meeting with leaders from Pasadena, other cities who are going to tell us, yeah, we did this, we changed it on the next go around. There's a lot of lessons from that. Tell us a little bit about the company that you work for, Thatcher, and what y'all are doing and why you're going to California.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. So, yeah, Vela Solar is about a 12-year-old company, been doing rooftop solar primarily in the Southeast. We really help industrials and corporate customers really repower their businesses for the future. So that can be solar, that can be battery storage. And then this year, we've become a channel partner with EV Connect. And so we're also offering fleet charging and employee vehicle charging integrated with those systems. Because we really see this convergence being the future and really helping businesses understand how to both power their businesses and now power their employees and their transportation solutions are really exciting for us.
What's the difference between what drives a company to do solar and what drives a company to do EV chargers or work with their employees on EVs?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I think the motivation on the solar side has been somewhat altruistic in marketing in this first decade, right? They see it as a way to visibly show their ESG commitments. I think with vehicle charging, it's really more about operational efficiency and effectiveness. And, if you have employees with a need, and that's a charger that needs to, get them from home to their office, which, now a lot of people have made lifestyle choices during COVID and have moved, several miles away from home. And so maybe they have a 50 or 60 mile commute. They're coming in once or twice a week. They really need that charger to be able to get their vehicle back to capacity and get them home. And so I think businesses are rightly responding to that. I think what we've seen in the operational benefits of EVs over ICE vehicles in the reduced maintenance, the reduced impact on road and other infrastructure is really motivating businesses to begin to embrace this transition pretty quickly in many cases.
And we're going to California with a group of about 37 Georgia officials because they do have a million EVs. We have 40,000. I mean, we came through the Atlanta airport, and you compare the Atlanta airport with the LAX airport. The LAX facility that we're going to be seeing has 1,000 chargers in it, and you put your airline schedule in there, and it integrates with the whole parking system. The cars, charged by a managed charging system. It doesn't trip, it doesn't trip the system because they're managing that, and making sure they're not getting demand charges. I mean, it seems like California has really thought through how they're going to be able to do this at scale.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you're the sixth largest economy in the world, right, you're really a microcosm for the growth of anything. And I think that scale forces California to move quicker with more intention maybe than we have to, you know, here at home, right? And so, yeah, I'm with you. I'm really excited to see kind of, as you said, both the right choices they've made and the wrong choices they've made, so that we can come back here as we continue to work collectively to build this infrastructure in Georgia, you know, do it in an even better way than we've seen in California.
Maybe Georgians have seen the Rose Bowl. They've heard about Pasadena, maybe seen a parade or something. But the city of Pasadena, they have their own electric company. And on the lip of their gas company, their gas, not their gas company, but their gas plant, they are doing EV fast charging, and they are cutting or undercutting the price of others in California, where others are charging 45, 47 cent a kilowatt. They're charging under 20 cent in Pasadena, trying to get people to stop and grow their load there. That's a pretty clever, creative thing, and we're going to be seeing all of that and how they're doing that. I think there's a lot of lessons for city leaders, especially north of I-20, leaders in Sandy Springs, Johns Creek, Alpharetta, Peachtree Corners, Cumming, Roswell, places where, frankly, there's a lot of EVs in Georgia.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm a MEAG customer in Marietta, and I would love to see Marietta Power increase the really level three EV fast charging at the cucks of the perimeter and be a destination for folks commuting in from the northern suburbs, you know, from the mountains. They need a little juice on their way into downtown. I think there's a huge economic development opportunity and a very significant load growth opportunity for our MEAGs and EMCs on the really periphery of our cities, whether it's Atlanta or Augusta or Columbus or Macon or Valdosta, right? And I think we're seeing, you know, the early stages of that kind of ring infrastructure being put in. But yeah, I think Pasadena is a great case study in, you know, really being thoughtful about your role as a charging destination. I think we're going to see a lot more communities talking about that.
Just a couple of minutes with Thatcher Young of Velo Solar. Thatcher, I had a guy call me from Atlanta. Actually, he lives in Chattanooga, but he's a lobbyist. Doesn't lobby our commission, but he was asking me about getting an electric car. And his office is at the Georgia Bar, which is on Marietta Street. And he was asking me which type of car. He was thinking about one type. And I really steered him to the Tesla. I don't have a Tesla. I've never owned a Tesla. But their charging system is superior. And he has so long to go for his commute that he does once or twice a week. How are you advising people regarding, you know, cars to buy? Because there are questions they need to answer before they make that decision, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you and I both are in our third or fourth EV at this point, right? We've driven all electric. We've driven plug-in EV hybrids. You know, I really encourage people to think about their commute and how they daily drive their vehicle and make a purchase based on that. And then hold those unusual, you know, long trips. I'm going to Miami with the family for Christmas and rent a vehicle, right, that gets you to and from that location. But yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, Tesla has done an amazing job in building a really integrated infrastructure that allows for fairly easy road tripping, right? And the announcement that they made a few months ago where they're opening that up now to other manufacturers and they're going to integrate that charging port on those vehicles, I think is fantastic and is going to make it a lot more flexible for others. But yeah, it's really, I think for EVs, it needs to be both a practical and an aesthetic choice, right? Whereas I think for most people in their ICE vehicles, they make very aesthetic choices, right? I go hunting twice a month and I need a four-wheel drive to get that quarter mile back in the woods. Or, you know, occasionally I take nine kids from soccer to the pizza place. So I need a car that holds nine folks, right? And when you become an EV driver, I think you're much more practical about your transportation needs and wants. And and the great thing about, you know, Tesla or Rivian or Hyundai EV6, like, these are really aesthetic and practical choices married together in a really beautiful way that you don't get in a conventional ICE vehicle.
Well, tell us how folks can contact you and find out more about Velo Solar.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Thatcher Young, or Velo Solar at velosolar.com. And yeah, we'd love to talk to you about your needs.
Stick around. Another one of our traveling companions will talk to us a little bit about why they've come out here to California and what they're looking for. This is Tim Echols. You're listening to Energy Matters.
Everyone has tough times in their life. By checking the Project Share box at the bottom of your utility bill, you can make life a little easier for your neighbors. Your $1, $2, or $5 checkoff is matched by the utility and then used by the Salvation Army to help folks having a tough time paying their energy bills. It's that easy. Join PSC Commissioner Tim Echols and many others by donating via your power bills this year. See more by clicking ProjectShareInfo.com. And thank you.
Tim Echols, host of Energy Matters, here with Jeff Pratt of Green Power EMC. Jeff, more and more EMCs are offering solar to their members, and you're seeing it grow like crazy across rural Georgia.
Tim, you're right. Co-ops in Georgia are doing a great job of deploying solar across the state. In fact, they're leaders in the country with respect to engaging customers and deploying large-scale solar to benefit all their members.
Hey, contact your EMC and ask them about their solar energy policy, or just Google Green Power EMC.
You've heard about Gem Cars on Energy Matters. Made by Polaris in Anaheim, California, these street-legal, small electric vehicles go where golf carts are not allowed. Equipped with seatbelts, headlights, optional doors, and a tag, Gem Cars and Trucks are perfect for shuttles, corporate, or college campus use. In fact, Georgia Tech has over 100 of them. The new generation Gems have many options when selecting the battery type, onboard chargers, and enclosures to suit the climate. Go to GemCarService.com to find out more. That's GEMCarService.com.
Marlin Gas Services, a subsidiary of Chesapeake Utilities Corporation, is your leader in mobile pipeline solutions for hold, peak, and backup services to meet utilities' demand schedules, and their experts in CNG and RNG transportation and logistics solutions. No pipeline, no problem. Marlin Gas Services can provide uninterrupted natural gas service for short or long-term projects, no matter the location. Learn more about how we can support your mobile natural gas needs at marlingas.com/energymatters. That's marlingas.com/energymatters.
Hey, Tim Echols back on Energy Matters and still in California, here in LA with my friends Yannick and Corey. Yannick, you're from Germany, used to work for Lucid. You're going to be here at the LA Auto Show. What are you excited about for your show there?
Hey, Tim. Great to be on. So, yeah, I'm here for Pionics. We do software for EV charging stations. I'm the head of North America. So I'm excited to meet a lot of people from different car companies and charger manufacturers tomorrow that might want to use our software. But I'm also excited to meet a lot of my old colleagues from Lucid, because Lucid has a really big press conference tomorrow because they will launch the Gravity SUV, which is their second electric model. So that'll be great to see tomorrow.
Yeah, Corey, you helped me pull this trip together. I know you're excited about meeting all our new friends out here. A lot of folks from Georgia who are here to see the scale that California does electric vehicles at.
Super excited about it. And the group that you've pulled together is an impressive group. I'm pivoting in from food service software, so to be able to see the group that you've assembled is just fantastic. I'm especially excited about being able to test drive the new EV9 by Kia. We've seen a ton of two-row SUVs here in the U.S., and I'm more of like a proper three-row SUV type of consumer. So I'm excited about the big SUVs, and like you said, the scale of how California does it, we're going to be able to see the scale of some of the new SUVs coming out.
So, Yannick, you know, I've had seven EVs. I'm on my fourth Nissan Leaf. I love the Nissan Leaf. I've never had a fancy car like a Lucid or a Tesla. What are you seeing right now in the EV world from the average Californian? I mean, there's so many Teslas here. Are Teslas just continuing to be bought and leased here, or are people kind of branching out now?
Still a lot of Teslas being sold. Like, people joke it's the new Honda Civic around these parts of the country. I think it's a really solid car. It's probably the best value for money out there in that $40,000 range right now, the Model 3. I think some people, because it's being so commodified, will start looking for something different. So I saw some people purposefully pick the Polestar 2 just because it's like similar to the Tesla and similar price, but it's something else. It's a new brand. So yeah, I think Tesla will still sell a lot, but I think some people will also start looking at the other brands, especially now that the other brands are getting access to the Tesla supercharger network and getting that connector as well.
Corey, Elon Musk to me is brilliant, and I've never bought one of his cars, but I really love the reliability of their network, how many chargers they have, and because it gives an EV driver peace of mind. And frankly, new EV drivers need peace of mind because you're not used to that paradigm.
So I'm on my 9th EV. I've got 8 and 9 in the stable right now, a Tesla Model 3 and then a Harley Davidson Livewire 1, an electric Harley. And the difference between the Tesla charging and the non-Tesla charging is profound. We took a 400-mile trip over the last 2 days from San Francisco down here, down into LA, in a BMW i4, and that's a non-Tesla charger setup. And so the infrastructure here in California is fantastic. Musk, like you said, I think it's really brilliant, but the quality and reliability of the Tesla charger is something that you just get addicted to. You don't even think about it. You just hop in your car, plug in where you're going. It does all the hard part for you, and you know that when you get to a charger, it's going to work. It's going to be really fast. Today, we needed to charge, and it was half the speed of a supercharger. It was slow, and so there was a line to get to it, and it's just not the same experience.
If you're just joining me, I've got Yannick and Corey here. A lot of noise in this background because this is our opening reception for our Come See the Future of EVs. Yannick, have you ever been to Georgia?
Never.
Yeah, well, you know, California has about 1 million EVs, I think, a little more. Georgia has 40,000. So, I'm bringing 37 people, leaders, out here to see how they do manage charging, to see how many chargers they have, and they don't just build 6 or 8. I mean, I pass numbers of Tesla chargers today where I saw on my screen as I was driving a Tesla, 26, you know, 12, 14. So there was always Tesla chargers to be had. So I just feel like that California's, you know, they've made some mistakes, in how they've done it, but they've learned their lessons, I think, and California is the EV mecca of the world.
So I disagree. You might hear my German accent there in the background. I think California is probably, 2 or 3 years ahead of Georgia, but I think Europe is another 2 or 3 years ahead of California. And then if you want to go really far in the future, go to Norway. That's probably the EV mecca of the world. I think they're already at 70-ish% of new cars sold being electric now. Some car brands are stopping selling gasoline cars at all via their Norwegian dealers. So if you want to go really far in the future, do the next trip to Norway.
Wow. Well, let me ask you about cars in Germany. I mean, I was in Germany in 2012, then 14, 17, and I didn't see that many EV chargers in Germany.
Yeah, a lot happened since 2018, basically. So a lot of the major German OEMs started releasing their EVs around then. So Audi came out with the e-tron in 2018. Ionity was started by 3 German OEMs plus Ford. And since then, there's been a lot done. A lot of different charge point operators in different countries have built out a really solid network across Europe.
I stand corrected. Corey, things can change. To my point that we were talking about early, just how fluid this world of EVs are, with prices going up and down, federal incentives coming and going, state incentives coming and going. I mean, what do you think it's like to be a first-time EV customer in America today?
I think that you're probably watching what your neighbors are doing, and I've written about it a couple times. We're going to be paying attention to what happens at the cul-de-sac level. If you see your neighbor get an EV and you don't see it get towed away, and you just see him go to work and come back and go to work and come back, and you're like, hey, Bob, how's it going? And he's like, it works great. I wake up every morning and it's full. And I drive to work and I come back and I wake up every morning and it's full. I think that's what's going to cause this rapid change in adoption. We're going to see it, we're seeing California we're going to see in Georgia here soon, too. I think I read that 7% of new auto sales in Georgia, and I might be wrong, but this is what I recall, 7% of new auto sales in Georgia, and I think that's going to be that magic number where you just start to look left and right on your street and see more and more people driving EVs and see that it's fine, and they love it.
Yannick, I am seeing more advertising from German car companies about EVs. Mercedes, not really Porsche, but BMW for sure. But are they selling the cars? I've been to the Welt there in Munich. I mean, I've watched people pick up their new BMW there. It's an experience to get a new German car. They really make a big deal about it. Are Germans buying these cars?
Yeah, I think the data says Germany has a higher percentage of new cars being electric than the U.S. So, yeah, the Germans are buying them.
So, percentage, but how about numbers?
I don't know, but Germany is a huge car market, so if the percentage is high, then the numbers are high, too.
I remember seeing a Mini Cooper EV when I was there in Germany. I went to a lot of industries on my visit there, and the CEO had a little Mini Cooper in a smart car. It was a little smart car. Are they still making the smart cars?
They just launched the new version of Smart #1. So Geely, I think, took over most of the development and the production of Smart. It's a joint venture with Daimler, I believe. So they just released a new electric Smart.
Well, Corey, we're doing a lot here. What are you most excited about on our trip?
On a trip to meet folks from utility. So I'm a tech guy, a product guy from the last couple of years. To be able to meet people at utility who are making decisions that's going to drive the infrastructure level, that's going to enable software guys, charger guys, product guys like me, like Yannick, to be able to build on top of that solutions that consumers care about. So I want to know what you're thinking about. I want to know what your friends are thinking about at the utility level, the state level, the regulator level.
Yannick, in Germany, I had a chance to meet with some of the utilities, but it's been a while. And like you said, things have changed since 2018. Do you feel like utilities are excited about EVs in Germany?
Yeah, I think they're excited about anything that grows loads. I think they're also excited about doing a little more B2C business, adding an additional dimension to their relationship with their customers. Now they can sell you energy not just at home, but also on the road. So there are a lot more liberalized markets, I think, in Europe than over here for utilities. So in Germany, I think EnBW, a big utility, is the largest operator of fast charging stations. That might not be correct. It might be Tesla, but it's between those two, I think.
Corey, as we visit with Zeem Fleet Solutions, Kenworth and their hydrogen facility, we're going to have part of our time is going to be a focus on fleets, because I don't know about you, but I feel like fleets are where we really can move the needle.
Absolutely. And I was talking to the World Research Institute and what they're doing with electric school buses, and I think that some Americans' first perception of electric vehicle might happen with the school bus, because they trust their kids to get on it. They see that it's big and they see that it's reliable. It could also be an amazing community benefit, because these are big batteries that have highly predictable routes that could serve additional benefit for the community to be able to provide power back if there is ever any type of issue. So fleets are going to be, I think, the answer, especially to make change at scale. And I think it's going to be a great ambassador for EVs to the average American as well. See that it works fine for the kids, safe for their kids.
Corey, how can folks find out how to get in touch with you?
I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn.com and then / my name, Corey, C-O-R-Y Hewitt, H-E-W-E-T-T.
And Yannick, how can folks get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn as well. LinkedIn.com/in/JANEKM. And then if folks want to check out my newsletter, it's called Electric Avenue. I write it every week. And the domain is www.readelectricavenue.com.
Well, there it is. Tim Echols in Los Angeles. Stick around. One more segment coming up. You're listening to Energy Matters.
As the Southeast's leading non-utility power provider, Cherry Street Energy energizes businesses like Porsche and Gulfstream in cities like Macon and Atlanta with predictably priced emission-free electricity. We build, own, and operate solar power plants for our partners, allowing them to deliver on sustainability promises with no complexities, upfront costs, or ongoing maintenance. All they get is a power bill, simple as sunshine. To learn more, contact us at info@cherrystreetenergy.com.
Tim Eccles of Energy Matters here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over the state. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. Gerd and all the folks at Solar Sun World understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work for you. From tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation, they'll advise you on the best path forward. And Solar Sun World now offers power purchase agreements. Find them at SolarSunWorld.com. SolarSunWorld.com.
Hello, Commissioner. I feel like it's very important that I occasionally let you know that I really appreciate the job that you do and your commitment to solar energy and electric vehicles. It really makes me happy, the idea of our wonderful state having more and more solar. Just, it really excites me. I really love the job you're doing. Anyway, thank you. Have a great day.
Hey, Tim Eccles, one more segment here on Energy Matters. I'm out behind LAX at a new ABM parking garage. I want to introduce you to John and Dakota and Nelson. Let me start, and Joel, my buddy here with ABM. John, let me start with you. How many parking places are in this garage?
There's over 1,500 parking garage stalls at this garage. We've got close to 500 of them are EV chargers.
And Dakota, we've got a few chargers at the Atlanta airport, but we're building a new 7-story deck. And I'm urging the city of Atlanta to talk to ABM, to do something like we've just seen here. I mean, how important is this room behind us with these transformers and all of the switch gear in order to be able to do the charging that you're doing here?
It's vitally important for the amount of EV chargers that we have here. The infrastructure needs to be adequate. And so the electric room here is vital.
Yeah. So and Nelson, I'm looking at a lot. This may be about half full on this bottom floor. Is this pretty typical? Because this is a reservation system, right?
Yes. Some of this reservation, some is totally for the regular customer. And, what we're doing over here also is monitoring all this charging, if working or not. And we know already also these cameras all over the place over here.
Joel, let me ask you, I mean, you're the one that told me about this. You did a feature for us on our EV Brain Trust. ABM, it's a big company. Y'all do more than just parking services, right?
We do, yeah. We're a Fortune 500 company, 125,000 plus employees. But our particular group, we're focused on technical solutions like e-mobility, microgrid with distributed generation. How do you power? How do you save energy? But yeah, we're really excited about the future and really excited about the opportunities for us to be able to help folks as they transition into the electric world.
So let's drill down a little further into this footprint of this deck. I mean, I'm looking from from north to south or east to west here. Take me through the charging levels that you have here in terms of first floor, second floor. Can you do that, John?
Sure. We've got level 3 and level 2 chargers here. We've got them on the first level. And then also on the third level, we've got them basically laid out so that it's an efficient use of the electrical rooms, and it's cost effective in the way we had it laid out. So we added this as a added feature to a new garage as it was being built, and we did the best with the numbers of chargers and parking stalls that we had as far as the layout and as far as the spaces go.
And from a visionary standpoint, and raise your hand if you can tell me who's the right one to answer this question. Who's the one that came up with this idea? Who did you have to push it with? How did that work?
So this is actually part of ABM Vantage program. We had a parking division and we had an e-mobility division. This is kind of our first collaboration of those two groups to be able to put our physical services, our manpower, with our know-how and knowledge, and be able to provide efficiencies, new revenue sources, etc. So this is something that we are currently trying to get out into the market and share across, sorry, Blaine, share across the industry, because it is vital. I think John mentioned earlier, I mean, this is this thing pays for itself just with some of the cost-saving models that we've implemented here.
Okay, the reservation system. Who can tell me about how the reservation system works? So which one of y'all would like to speak on that?
I could speak to it. We basically have two forms. One is you either show up, but then the other is the reservation. And then you've got a spot that's reserved for you at all. We have eight garages here at the CTA. And it basically allows you to have a space. You put in your departure and then your arrival. And then if you are going to charge with EV, we've got a stall selected for you at that time. And then it also helps with what we have with traffic conditions on the local streets on Century Boulevard and in the CTA at the airport, of alleviating people just driving around trying to find a spot. So that's been a real advantage to the local area, not having the traffic impact that you would typically on a holiday weekend or such. So that, and then there are discounts for those people who use the reservation online as an incentive to book future reservations for that same service. We've got three different levels of service. We've got the general parking. We've got premium parking, and those are at maybe more easy access locations, the first floor, that type of thing on parking garages. And then we've got valet services. So in addition to just what we used to have is just general parking, we have those three services to offer.
So this Carmageddon, I heard you, I've never heard that expression, but are you talking hundreds of cars or thousands of cars?
Tens of thousands. Basically, on a weekend, I've heard that, you know, we might have so many 100,000 people coming through the airport here, so we don't have that many parking stalls to allow for people to obviously park here. So we're able to defer that, hey, the CTA, the Central Transit area, is full, and you'll need to go to this off-site economy lot for parking. And there frees up some parking and driving lanes. Sorry.
I could almost catch a ride on that plane. It's so close.
Yeah, it sounds like it. On World Way, we don't have the traffic impact that we used to, because we would just defer via signage telling people, hey, go to the economy lot because it's everything's full at the CTA.
So, Joel, let me ask you about the reservation system. How much of a game changer is that for customer satisfaction, customer service here, just for all customers, whether they're driving an EV or not?
We've all been through that situation where we're running late to catch a plane, and we got to find a space. And just having the knowledge of you have a reserved space, and you know that that's one less worry to make your flight, it's big. I think the other thing it does for us, though, and for the customer, is it allows us to project energy load needs. It allows us to look at usage to see if we need more parking spaces. You know, there's some added value with a loyalty program. So it's a game changer for the industry to be able to have that type of certainty when it comes to EV parking. That's always the challenge. Yeah, for EV adoption, is you got to know that there's a charger available to charge the car.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with the ABM team here. I'm behind the LAX airport. You can hear the planes coming in. And you know the reason, Joel, this is so pertinent to Atlanta? Because we're about to build a new economy parking deck. And parking is about to be disrupted in Atlanta. There's about to be a lot of unhappy Atlantans trying to get parked at the airport. Fortunately, MARTA runs right in there, and I think we are going to see a bump from that. I want to ask about the equipment. These are pedestal level 2 chargers. Are they dumb chargers? Are they smart chargers? Do I have to swipe a key fob or anything, or do I just plug in?
They are smart. You would have to go in, and there's a scanner on the handle, and the scanner is what you would have to. It's kind of a login. So they're not dumb chargers. You will have to. And I believe it's linked to the overall system so that it links you with it. Once you charge it, tells you where you're at. So it's pretty Go ahead.
So if I've made a parking reservation, is it going to tell me I'm in this slot right here, 429? Or do I just come in and come to the lot?
You just come to the lot. You can make reservations for each of the products. So if it's valet, if it's premium, if it's general, if it's EV, ADA, you make a reservation for that type of space, and we ensure that those spaces are available when you arrive.
In terms of servicing, I know this. I see an old Nissan Leaf, like the one that I had. Do you have a lot of broken chargers in here? Are y'all fixing them pretty quickly?
Yes, I'm the one maintain all this one. I'm monitoring all this AV, and then I get monitoring all this AV, and I'm making sure everything's okay, so that it depends on how broke. That's it.
Relatively, yeah. I would say it's relatively low, considering how many we have. The maintenance or damage to the EV chargers is relatively low, considering the number, in my opinion.
I'm here with Joel and his team. Joel, how can folks find out more about ABM or more about this experience out here?
Yeah, all of this information is available with our website, obviously, abm.com. Just go on and search around e-mobility, parking solutions, and there's case studies on LAWA here, as well as contacts of who to reach out to for more information.
Well, I appreciate your whole team being on Energy Matters today, and I appreciate you hosting our group from Atlanta, because we're here on a vision trip. We're here to see the future in California. While I don't agree with a lot of stuff that they do, socially, schools, other things, they do electric vehicles right. And so we're here to learn from that. So thanks so much for being on.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having us.
Hey, it's Tim Echols. Thanks for listening to our show today from California. I hope you'll tune in. You can search for Energy Matters on anywhere you get your podcast with Energy Matters with Commissioner Echols. You guys have a great weekend. Been listening to Energy Matters.
Logan Booker here, producer of Energy Matters, and I want to tell you about the Advanced Power Alliance. For more than 20 years now, the Advanced Power Alliance has been leading the energy transition in America's traditional energy states. They advocate for wind energy, solar power, and energy storage, all while partnering with traditional resources to ensure that America has abundant, affordable, cleaner energy to power our homes, our lives, as well as our economy. With the growth of solar and advanced storage and power generation technologies, every state now has the opportunity to be a leading energy state. Advanced Power Alliance is proud to partner with the Georgia Large Scale Solar Association and work with the Public Service Commission, Georgia Power, and their customers as Georgia continues to be one of America's leading renewable energy states. You can learn more about the Advanced Power Alliance at poweralliance.org. That's poweralliance.org.
Having a family member or close friend in crisis is something we have all experienced. North Point Christian Counseling can help. Whether it's marriage counseling or a loved one struggling with abuse or addiction, North Point Christian Counseling has counselors in Macon, Athens, Kennesaw, and Albany to help bring healing and recovery. To find out more, call 478-973-9358 or find them online at northpointcounseling.org. That's 478-973-9358 or northpointcounseling.org.